Suck my nuts.
And that's our cold open.
Welcome, cats and kittens, to Cugecast 5000 Working Title Anniversary Edition Part 2. That's right, for the first time ever, we are exploring new ground as we have a two-parter episode that, for posterity, we'll still label as episode 52 and 53, but it's going to have a part 1, part 2 anniversary edition on the side, a little subtitle thing, so it all kind of connects together. And if you paid attention to the last episode, you'll know that we blabbered on about WrestleMania forever, including a bunch of questions about WrestleMania. So this time, we're going to blabber on about all the post-WrestleMania stuff. And yes, we probably will not get into hardly anything that's non-WWE. Guys, there's not much to talk about. We got Invasion Attack coming up, but it's only going to be worth talking about after the fact. And really, there's probably only two matches that will give us anything kind of newsworthy. Probably only like one. Who knows? So just bear with us. It's WrestleMania week, or the post-WrestleMania week, sort of late after WrestleMania week. Yeah, we're kind of catching up. Just get with the program and deal with it. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the flow. And as always, if you didn't already know, with me are my two partners, cohorts, and maybe heterosexual life mates, Cush and Artie.
I like where Julia said we're exploring new ground. Like, it just made me feel like we're just going to explore each other.
Yeah, on the ground. That's the whole idea.
I figured as much.
So, yeah, that whole heterosexual life mates thing, totally a lie at this point.
Look, man, it's been 52 long, sexual tension-filled episodes. It's about time we got down to business.
Yeah, we're literally just gonna turn this into Sexcast 5000.
Sexcast 5000! That's how many times we're gonna have sex.
Oh, yeah. Every single episode, that's how many times we're going to have sex.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, either we're going really fast or this is going to be the longest podcast ever every week.
But don't worry, we can talk about wrestling while we have sex. So you might hear some panting or Artie burp every once in a while, but that's just about it.
I think that that's the best kind of sex. Is like, is there anything better than wrestler sex?
I mean, I don't know if I've ever experienced wrestler sex.
Oh, sorry. I mean, I had to make a deal once. It was shady stuff. Sorry.
It was PSAs, wasn't it?
I wish. It was Phineas Godwin.
Oh. I am sorry, my friend. So, now that we've made all you guys feel undeniably awkward, let's talk about some fucking wrestling. Post-WrestleMania Raw was fucking crazy as usual. I don't know, some people probably, oh, it wasn't as good as like last year's or the year before, or whatever. That doesn't fucking matter. There was a lot of awesome fucking moments. And most importantly, whatever you think about the crowd, let's just cut the crowd out here right now. Because what we got for this Raw was a well-booked, well-written Raw. All the people that needed to get exposure had the exposure. We had some awesome, really compelling storytelling going on, and we also had Byron Saxton completely choking on the commentary. Like, can you ask for more? Not me.
I thought this show was near perfect until the last half hour.
Yeah, I actually completely agree.
It's like once Big Show and Kane entered the fray, it was like it was a wrap. I was like, oh, might as well just go to bed at this point.
I was disappointed, like, of all the good stuff that was on Raw and all the stuff that it seemed to be building towards, to end it with, like, kind of a lame-ass six-man was kind of like, oh, that's sad. It could have been better.
No, yeah, it was literally, like, everything else was an above-average, like, special Raw, and then the last segment was, like, something you would see in, like, any throwaway Raw in the middle of summer.
Yeah, that was definitely a down-season fucking finale there. And I think it just comes down to the fact that absolutely nobody gives a shit about Kane and Big Show anymore.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
You still have the fans still against Reigns for whatever stupid reason, even though he lost. Orton, they kind of have a love-hate, and I think the hate comes out when he's surrounded by all these other people. So I think the only people you had in that ring that like had nothing but legitimate love
were Rollins and possibly Ryback, especially since he was on the West Coast near his home. And it's just it made for a possibly the most interesting Wave segment, because they actually made a decision, fuck it, we're going to have the camera follow them, which is just kind of a bizarre thing to watch. But, I mean, that's about all you can really say about the main event, is the crowd was the only thing that was interesting, and maybe that was part of the reason why it wasn't as good of a segment, is because they kind of took away from it at parts. But, I mean, there was only so much you could do with Big Show and Kane and the people you had him surrounded with. Like, it was doomed for failure from the start.
Yeah, it's just like, especially coming off such a hot rest of the show where we had debuts, returns, just brutal carnage, and then you just go back to here and watch some paint dry.
The status quo, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can't like watch a four car accident and then just like be told like, hey, just look away, look at that grass growing over there. It's like, no, look at the fucking car crash. I want more of that.
Well, let's talk about the car crash then. Let's just get right into it. Lesnar, Brock Lesnar, obviously fucking furious that he lost his title, wasn't even the one pinned, wasn't with an opponent he was prepared for. A lot of things, there's a lot of good reasons for Lesnar to be pissed. The show started great with him being angry, him wanting to rematch with Rollins immediately, Rollins coming out looking like, it's something we haven't even really discussed yet, is Seth Rollins is WWE champion. These two things are going to kind of blend together. First off, looks fantastic with that belt around his waist. Like, I think it fits him very well. And as we've said plenty of times on this podcast, Seth Rollins was pretty much already the heel world champion on the show. Like, that was essentially the role he was playing while Lesnar was gone. Now it's as official as it can get. Now we actually have the belt here. We're going to see, hopefully, monthly defenses again. You know, everything that people have been complaining about, we got it now. And we have Rollins as the top heel and playing up to the role perfectly. And in doing so, he denied Brock Lesnar his rematch on Monday Night Raw, pissed off the crowd, and most importantly, pissed off Lesnar, who immediately just started tearing shit apart. Just the moment when he knocks the announce table over out of nowhere and crushes Booker T and JBL, and you see Michael Cole trying to run away to get to safety, and he gets caught, and you see Michael Cole eat an F5. Like, I mean, I feel like you don't see Michael Cole bump that often. I mean, I know that's, like, legit, but I'm sitting here thinking, I can't even think of any, like, big bumps he's taken. To take an F5, like, it just set this tone that, unfortunately, an hour later, they kind of weren't able to hold up that tone anymore. But it really made for such a fucking crazy segment that just made you really support Lesnar, really want to see him beat the shit out of Rollins, and then they take it away just perfectly to set up what will eventually hopefully be a Rollins-Lesnar match in the future somewhere.
I love that Rollins just weasels his way out of it. He's just like, I'm tired. I'm jet lagged. And then Brock just gets so mad and starts immediately killing people. And Rollins does what he does. He feeds his putty patrollers to Lesnar. And then, like, dude, Lesnar knocking over the table in one swift move, I thought was just awesome. It just made him look like a monster. You know, killing Cole, I think, did anybody not want to see that? Like, it got a big pop. And then hitting the camera guy, two F5s, the crowd was into it. I thought it was a really cool segment. It made Lesnar look like a badass, and I think that it was just an awesome moment for the live crowd.
I want to say there are two very special, there's like a secret special Hall of Fame in my heart that only has two segments in all of wrestling history inside of it. And those two moments are Brock Lesnar F5-ing Michael Cole and that one random SmackDown where Stone Cold grabbed Michael Cole and beat him up for like 10 straight minutes for no reason. That's my special people who beat up Michael Cole satisfactorily Hall of Fame. And this, getting a new induction into it, was so wonderful. I was so happy, because even though Michael Cole is a perfectly respectable person and announcer, and he's never done anything to me personally, there's no one on these shows I'd rather see get physically harmed than Michael Cole. That's probably bad, but the heart wants what it wants, man.
Yeah, it's funny how Cole is basically, this is why I loved his heel run so much. Cole is the biggest heel without trying ever. Like, he's just the guy you want to see eat an F5. You want to see him get powerbombed, spine-bustered. pedigreed all at once, too, by the way. Like, I just want to see him get his ass kicked and then leave.
I mean, he has such a punchable face, you know? Like, how do you not just want to see him just... Yeah, like you said, take every single devastating finisher at the exact same time.
But, you know, kudos, props to him for taking the F5, because, I mean, he must have known that was coming beforehand all the way through the show and just been shaking in his boots like, this is going to suck.
Yeah, he shook right out of his shoes as they were knocked off his feet.
But now that it's pretty clear that he's going to be getting some extended vacation time, because it really seems like they're really booking this to, like, sort of give the other announcers a chance to show what they can do. I mean, hey, if you're going to get a six-month vacation out of it, then go for it.
Yeah, unfortunately, Brian Saxophone did not hold his own in the commentary booth. It was terrible.
Yeah, dude, like, talk about getting the yips hardcore in the last second. Like, never seen a man... Like, I've seen him do commentary so many times, and it's not like he's, like, fantastic, but he's always been good. He's never been bad. Here, he was just... I must have been Vince in his ear, and he was nervous as fuck. I don't know, but man, he did. When King is like very notably doing great in his old age, and Saxon is still sitting there, like, yeah, this is a crazy match. You know, it's just like I don't care if it was like maybe for the first couple segments it made sense for Saxon to be kind of like taken aback, but I don't think that was on purpose really. I think it was just Saxon choking, man.
Yeah, and let me be perfectly clear. Saxton failed in every way an announcer can possibly fail. He failed at setting up storylines. He failed at advertising future things in a compelling way. He failed in making his voice register above like a dull murmur so that you could actually listen to what he was saying. I would forget for minute stretches at a time that he was there. That's the saddest part. He was so bad that Lawler was actively like doing both jobs and feeding him lines. Lawler was doing that shit. He was... That is unbelievably bad. And then when you came to look at SmackDown, they had a whole new guy on there, right?
They had Tom Phillips back on, and yeah, they did fucking fantastic.
Exactly. And, you know, it's such a shame for Byron Saxton, because it's so unforgiving to try to do this job. There have only been, what, like a handful of people who have ever done it really well, especially on the WWE level. But to be perfectly honest, I mean, he's... might not get another chance, and I can't say I'd blame them for not. So that's like 10 years of development down the tubes for nothing.
I'm just saying, if they didn't like get cold feet and had been going all the way with Tom Phillips and he had got this moment, I don't think he would have choked as hard.
Yeah, Tom Phillips, he still doesn't really exist in my mind. He's not even a real person. None of them are. You know, they're not. They're so, yeah. So vanilla. They're so vanilla.
Just like Jay White. Just like Jay White.
Bring back Josh Grisham, god damn it.
Alright, so we're getting a little off topic here, obviously. Kush was talking about Michael Cole potentially taking vacations, but I think we know someone who's going to be taking probably a much longer vacation, and that's Brock Lesnar, who, because of his action, has been indefinitely suspended. So we're not getting Rollins-Lesnar anytime soon. I mean, if it's anything like his last few deals with WWE have been, we're probably not seeing him until SummerSlam. Who knows? Maybe we won't even see him at SummerSlam. I think we will, but I don't think we're going to see him before that, other than promoting whatever he's doing at SummerSlam. So, I think while it sucks that we're not going to get Lesnar on a regular basis, it still gives that attraction feel to him, and now we're set up to a point where we can see Lesnar as, like, a babyface for the first time ever, because Rollins is supposed to be the heel.
Oh, yeah.
And Lesnar... I was just saying, Lesnar is one of the only guys that I feel like, well, I mean, other than like people like Bryan and stuff, I feel like Lesnar's going to get cheered over Rollins like almost any day, especially in this situation. Even if they want Rollins to win, they're going to cheer Lesnar beating the shit out of him. It's going
to
happen.
Not only are they going to cheer it, all Brock Lesnar has to do to promote this match is come out on Raw, grab a microphone and say, "Suplex City, bitch."
Yeah.
And like, oh, that's it. The match is sold for SummerSlam. And I assume we're going to see SummerSlam, Night of Champions, probably the Rumble, WrestleMania. Pretty much the same schedule he worked this past year. I assume we see Lesnar for 4 pay-per-views a year.
You know what? I'm not usually someone who goes in for fantasy booking super hard, But, like, I can't escape this one, this idea that, like, I don't want Brock Lesnar to show up on WWE television again until the night of SummerSlam. I do not want him to show up on a Raw and F5 Seth Rollins. I do not want him to show up at all. I want them to, like, put, like, a counter on the screen. This many days until Brock Lesnar's suspension is up at SummerSlam that night. I want him to just be like, Seth Rollins, you die in 112 days. And, like, just have Paul Heyman come up every once in a while to be like, it's coming, it's coming. And then that night he has to defend it, and Lesnar just murders him.
Yeah, like, have Heyman just come out and be like, you know, this way you can have Heyman come out, cut his little promo about time, either involving clocks or calendars or whatever, and just say, Seth Rollins, you're on the road to Suplex City.
I mean, it's such an easy sell. I mean, Rollins can just, like, dodge Orton and Reigns in the meantime, and then, I mean, I would buy that SummerSlam if you advertised it today. Like, I don't need any further enticement.
Nope.
Amen to that. So, let's talk about another big thing that happened on Monday Night Raw that it's something we here on the Cushcast have been talking about forever. It's something, I mean, so many people have been saying that it needs to happen. So many people have wanted it. And god damn it, we finally got it. Sheamus came back as a damn heel. And oh god, it feels so fucking good. Like, he comes out with the mohawk and the braids, and I think it works for him. I think he also did it on purpose. So he knew that the reaction he would get, it just seems right. And I mean, just the way he, like, breathes it in when they're like, you look stupid, like when they chant that at him, he just breathes it in, both on Raw and SmackDown. It's like, you know, he just it feels very intentional. And even if it wasn't, you know, he was like, oh yeah, this is beautiful, this works perfectly. And it sets him apart from what he used to be. If you saw his match on SmackDown that he had with Bryan, first off, a great match. Second off, Sheamus wrestled a match that I've never seen Sheamus wrestle. Like, he wrestled different. I mean, you know, he still had his big spots. He still did, like, the White Noise, the 10 Beats of the Bowerin, which I hope gets another name at some point. Like, he still had those signature spots, but everything else in between was way different. The demeanor is different. His promos feel so much more stronger now. His promo that he did on SmackDown was, like, really solid. Like, I love the whole, you know, like, I'm gonna crush your dreams, you know, I'm gonna crush all your heroes, which kind of actually a little bit plays into what Artie was talking about him kind of coming back as a troll. And while it's not exactly the way that Artie said, he's coming back with a goal to obviously target, you know, our internet darlings, most importantly Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler. And whatever this leads to, it doesn't matter whether it leads to an extended Ziggler feud, an extended Bryan feud, a triple threat feud between the three, whatever the fuck it is, I'm fucking stoked. Because Sheamus is a heel, and the combination of him, Ziggler, and Bryan in any form is going to produce, like, in-ring gold. And the moment he came out and bro-kicked Daniel Bryan, I was sold.
You know, I obviously am the big Sheamus fan here. And, like, well, as soon as he came out with the new look, I was like, that's it. He's got a new look. He's got black trunks. He's definitely going heel. And a lot of people were just like, oh, he looks stupid. No, fuck that, man. He looks like a goddamn Viking. Like, it's different. It's just, it's different. And that's what he needed. And then on SmackDown, he came out with a new theme, which is funny because it's the song from his vignettes.
From his vignettes, yeah.
Which is so funny because it's like, oh, they were kind of like giving us the hint the whole time. Like, oh, he's going to be a new Sheamus. And, like, I love how those vignettes were like the old Sheamus with his old hair and his mustache. And everyone was like, oh, he's going to come back as the same boring guy. And then on Raw, it hit, you know, it's a shameful thing, lobster head, and there he ran out, and you're like, oh, he's a fucking babyface still. And then, dude, the heel turn was brilliant. I loved his beatdown, and I loved on SmackDown when he basically was just like, you know what? And, like, metaphorically flipped off the fans, was just like, I'm gonna beat the shit out of these little guys. You know, it was just, it was the heel Sheamus I've wanted for a long, excuse me, long time. And I love it.
I have never gone from disinterest to 100% hype faster with just one move than when Sheamus bro-kicked Daniel Bryan. Because when he ran in, I was just like, oh, babyface Sheamus. Don't give a fuck. Can't possibly ever give a fuck. Go fuck yourselves. Don't care. And then when he did that, I was just like, never mind, main event, push him to WrestleMania, my favorite thing ever, Sheamus forever. We're loves, yay! And it really is like that. I mean, the look is so good and the reaction is so strong so far. And, like, we've had a lot of cruiserweight bullies, which is sort of what this is, over the years. Just, like, big guys beat up on the smaller guys because they can. We've never had one who could offer what Sheamus does in the ring. Dude is legit fantastic. So I am over the moon by this direction and by him as a heel. And the new music, man, I got to get some of that on my iPhone because that's some sick shit.
Yeah, and, like, it's funny because I think for the first time in a long time, Sheamus actually has a character. He's not just Irish. He's, like, he's this fucking cruiserweight killer, and he should be like that. I mean, here's a guy who came right into WWE, won the title from John Cena, and he should be at the top. But instead, it's all these little vanilla midgets that are placed above him, and he should have a legitimate gripe with these guys, and I like that. And I want him to continue to be like, you know what, Brian? I've already beaten him at WrestleMania. Ziggler, I've already beaten him before. I'm not worried about these little guys.
Yeah, it's just greatness. Like, there's nothing more that can be said about it. Like, I've always loved Sheamus. When I first got back into wrestling, he was, like, the thing that caught my attention. He's always been great in the ring. I was not a fan of, like, 80% of his babyface run, but just has always been a great in-ring guy, and I knew if they turned him back heel, they can restart, and they can really build some fucking stock back into this guy, and that's exactly what they fucking did here on both Raw and SmackDown, and making Daniel Bryan bloodied. Like, what, I don't know whether that was from the elbow strike or from Bryan, if he hit the table. It didn't really look like he did, but I know that, like, commentary said it, but just made Sheamus look like a fucking monster coming in without taking anything away from the guys that he's looking like a monster against. So yeah, I love the Sheamus heel turn.
And if you haven't seen the pictures yet, or the video, go look at Brian getting that thing stitched up, because that is like a clear-cut wound down to the skull.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so
nasty stuff.
Nasty, but it's so awesome.
Yeah. You know, obviously this means that Sheamus is going to be probably messing around with Daniel Bryan in the Intercontinental title for a bit. I think he'll kind of move away. But with Bryan in the Intercontinental title, which Bryan and Ziggler had an awesome match on Raw, we didn't really talk about that. That's what led into the Sheamus moment. I mean, I don't know what else you could say other than if you haven't seen that match, you should go check it out because it was great. It got a standing ovation like halfway through the match. Like, maybe not halfway, but in the middle of the match. Like, it's good. And it's awesome. And the Intercontinental Championship, it looks like it's going in a great direction. Let's talk about the other mid-card title, the U.S. title that John Cena just won from Rusev. And immediately, just changing things up. He just comes out and he's like, yeah, I'm the champ. You know, I'm happy about it. You guys are going to have to deal with it. But let's not, you know, who gives a fuck about that, really? Do you give a fuck? I mean, I guess I kind of give a fuck. What you care about is who the hell I'm going to fight. And Dean Ambrose comes out. He issues an open challenge, and Dean Ambrose is the man who takes it, and the crowd goes nuts. They have a really good match. For a few moments, I thought that maybe Ambrose might actually get it, and I was like, maybe this is them making up for him not getting a WrestleMania moment. Not saying they had to, but it was something that got me caught up. And that's what's great about this position, is where Cena, as he said on SmackDown, he specifically said, to me, this title represents opportunity. Yeah, and he's basically like, I'm going to do an open challenge every week, which I think is brilliant. You have John Cena, who's the top guy in the company, down with the belt that is essentially the lowest belt on the hierarchy. I mean, maybe Rusev, with his character behind it, kind of gave it a boost, but in the long run, it'll always be seen as less as the Intercontinental title when, you know, push comes to shove. Now, Cena winning it makes it's this situation. Where it's like, well, Cena's got a belt, but it's a lower belt, so he's got to be working with lower guys, right? And for the first time, you have a situation where Cena beating a bunch of lower guys isn't going to hurt them. It's going to make them look great by having competitive, like, very close matches with the top guy in the company, like Dean Ambrose did. And with him saying that it's about opportunity and this belt represents opportunity, it really puts it in that role that, like, I know me and Artie in particular have talked about a lot, of it being like that European style title, that lower card title, the title that maybe it's not necessarily lower than Intercontinental Championship belt, but it's more accessible. It's the belt that someone gets for the opportunity to show what they can do, to prove that they can be a star. And if they suck, then they don't get any other shots until they prove wrong. And if they do great, then they move on to the Intercontinental title or the world title or whatever the fuck they want to move on to. And I just think that this whole storyline with Cena is one of the greatest things they could ever do. A weekly open challenge will bring us some really good matches. We'll put some people over, and whoever is the person that actually defeats him in that open challenge, oh man, they are fucking made for a while.
Okay, so my thoughts are, I love the open challenge idea, and I hope it gets answered every week by a different mid-carder. Stardust, R-Truth, Bo Dallas, all these people just have like a good 7 minutes with John every week. And then what I want it to build to is to Cena versus Reigns for the belt. And I want Reigns to be the guy who beats him and dethrones him and gets the rub. And that's my big goal for it. Now, the other thing is, people are saying Cena's supposed to get a new belt. I'm very curious on that. I hope it literally comes out just looking like an eagle. Like, just a bald eagle. There's, like, the Twin Towers on it. Just, like, I want it to be made out of the American flag. Like, I just want it to be ridiculous. Like, super-duper ridiculous.
I want it to just be the World Heavyweight title belt and just be like, ha, surprise, we bought it back.
Oh, yeah, like, that would be awesome if Cena was just like, no, guys, seriously, I'm a lower card champion. Wink, wink.
The United right. States and the rest of the world champion.
Nah, dude, it's pretty obvious that he's going to change it to the hardcore title. 24/7 rules, bitch.
That would be amazing to just go on. I would love to see, like, The Miz attack Cena in his house on Total Divas and be like, ah, I'm going for the title. Here's Earl Hebner.
That would make Total Divas must-watch TV for me. Bring back the hardcore title and make it a Total Divas thing.
Wait, yes.
That might distract from the Divas. Maybe. Who cares? It's a reality show. I don't give a fuck.
And then that would add intrigue, because, like, Nikki could just hit John with a pot anytime she wanted and get the hardcore title. Like, huh? Right?
Oh, dude, yeah. Fuck it. Cena, bring out the hardcore title. Come on, let's do it. Now, I do think Reigns is actually a good choice. I think Ryback would be a decent choice to maybe beat Cena. Kind of like a throwback of like, hey, here's that guy that, you know, got fucked over by Cena. Let's give him a moment, you know. Let's see what he can do with the title, because he's not going to be doing, I don't think he's going to be like scraping the Intercontinental title or anything like that anytime soon. Might be a good spot for him. Who knows? Maybe we'll see someone like Neville get that opportunity. Which, while we're on the subject, yeah. How was that fucking Neville and Lucha Dragons debut?
I love them both.
I never imagined that Neville and the Lucha Dragons would debut on the same show, and the Lucha Dragons would have the more impressive debut, though. Like, Neville did everything right, and he got over, and it was great. But the Lucha Dragons tore the fucking house down. The crowd was losing their minds for the Lucha Dragons. And while they were so kind of like bland and like, eh, who gives a shit in NXT, when you look at them on the WWE roster, there isn't anything like them. And I think that, like, it's been a while since Rey and since Sin Cara, like Mystico Sin Cara was there, that I think fans are ready for Luchador stuff again. And man, did they kill it their first time out.
Yeah, man, I thought Kalisto looked incredible. Like, God, you talk about a guy who's just so small, but he just exudes, like, a big personality in that ring. Like, that dude just dominates the 20x20. And he was the star of that match, I felt. But, like, I want to get on to Neville real quick. People are complaining about the loss of his first name. Okay, it wasn't that hard to guess. His first name was Adrian. Vince was not going to let a man come out with the name Adrian. Second of all, I dug the cape and the hood gimmick. Like, I like it. It's kind of like, yeah, he's a superhero gimmick, but it's not blatant, you know?
And like, I like it, yeah.
I like, you know, that they didn't just call him Neville. She was like, the man that gravity forgot. It's like, oh, okay. Like, we're going with the nickname here. Like, he's kind of being booked as a superhero, and I actually like it.
Yeah, that sort of goes along with that rumor that, like, Vince saw him and was like, I want a Mighty Mouse gimmick. Like, not literally a Mighty Mouse gimmick, but, like, a tiny guy who can beat anybody. I want that. And I'm like, well, fuck, Vince. That's the first time you've ever wanted that. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And Neville is so ripped and juiced that, like, it's believable.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the point that the Lucha Dragons definitely had the more impressive debut, and I think that was almost kind of the point, you know, because Lucha Dragons needed it, you know, as for the most part, for the, like, mainstream wrestling fan, the Lucha Dragons, who the fuck are they? They might remember Sin Cara, but, you know, like, they, at that point, they're kind of like, oh, hey, it's Sin Cara, you know. So Lucha Dragons needed to look strong, especially Kalisto, and they did a great job. Neville's already kind of sold on his own. They gave him the whole video package hype, which that video, like, tribute that they have for him, I think is amazing. They have, like, the cape, it makes him stand out. He's already had that crazy Raw debut where everyone's seen the Red Arrow, and surely one of the top guys that whenever someone talks about NXT, especially at the end of last year, the names that would be coming up are Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. Yeah, there were some other people there that were awesome, but those are the big ones. Now, obviously, you add Balor's, Owens, and a Tommy to the list, sort of. But it's still... He already had that clout more than the Lucha Dragons did. So all he had to do was go out there and do his thing. Show how crisp he can wrestle and hit the Red Arrow. And unfortunately, as we've already alluded to, Byron Saxton did a terrible job of selling how great Neville was. He's quiet during most of the matches. Says, watch this, ladies and gentlemen. You're about to see something special. You're in for a treat. Oh, he's about to go for the Red Arrow. This is a big move, ladies and gentlemen. Like, Saxton, come on. You're killing me here.
Yeah, no, I completely... Definitely. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. I agree. I think that... I don't know, but like I really enjoyed Neville's debut. I thought he made the, like, he was so fast, he was so just on point, man. I thought that the dude killed it. And I think we can just say that both of these debuts were certainly better and more hopeful than the ones we got last year with, like, Adam Rose, Bo Dallas, and Emma and stuff. So, like, it's actually looking, like, good for the NXT guys to get called up now.
They're also a higher class of NXT guys. Like, when Adam Rose and Bo Dallas came up, there was definitely a feeling like, look, there's so much going on down in NXT, these guys have to be kind of squeezed out onto the main roster to see if they're going to stick. Like, there's just no more room for them to just sit around here for another 5 years waiting to see if they'll work. Let's see what we got. And in fairness, they got some life out of Adam Rose, and it is what it is with the other two. But I definitely think that this was an incredible start for both of these guys. Kalisto looked like he could be a genuine star one day. Neville did exactly what he needed to do. And the best part about Neville's high flying, and you don't see this with a lot of high flyers, is like there's never any fear that he's not going to hit the Red Arrow. You know what I mean? Like there's never any fear. He's never out of control. It's not Sabu. It's like the opposite of Sabu, right? Every high spot he does is exactly the same every single time. Like, that must make, like, Vince feel really good.
It's the same thing with a guy like Evan Bourne, who just always hit that shooting star just on point, never missed, never messed up. It was just beautiful.
Yeah, and that's the most that Vince ever pushed a cruiserweight, if you recall. Like, he wanted to go with Evan Bourne, and I think that that's part of the reason why.
Yeah, and actually, interesting that comparison. Because Bourne is actually a guy who, unlike most cruiserweights, he can and regularly shows his ability to like put together like a cohesive, substantial match rather than just going from spot to spot. And Neville is the exact same way, which is one of the reasons I love him. He can be flashy, quick, catch your attention, but it never feels like he's giving too much, you know, like especially in the WWE environment. Like I feel like he's just one of those guys who totally gets the ring and knows how to maximize his abilities. And I think he's going to go pretty far on the main roster. I don't see him. I don't know about like main event run, but I think he can be like a really well respected, like Intercontinental champion and shit.
Hey man, we all said the same thing about Daniel Bryan. You know, we never thought he'd make it to the main event and the dude closed out 30.
Very true. Very true. I mean, Neville's got the in-ring ability to kind of get there and enough of the flash to catch more people's attention, but he's got the same fucking looks problem and maybe worse problems on the mic, at least with the accent. I actually think he's pretty solid on the mic these days.
Yeah, and he's learned how to tone down his accent a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he has that looks problem. I mean, he's not like the most handsome dude or whatever, but he legit looks like a fucking like a statue was built, and then like a dude stepped out of it. Like, it's crazy.
Good point. Yeah, I wasn't even considering his physique. I was just thinking about the face. Yeah, because he's got way more things going for him than Daniel Bryan, actually. So who knows? Like, he might actually end up going the full distance. And I'm in support of it because I think he could handle it. So this is completely, like, random but sort of connected because we're talking about NXT. And obviously, people like Neville are showing that it's quite a successful place. But not everyone can get that success. Like, people like CJ Parker, who is now released from the WWE or NXT, whatever you want to call it, because the dude was never going to make it to the main roster. Though, I do want to give a little shout-out. I think the dude had a good gimmick towards the end when he was doing the heel role. I think if he's going to the indies, I would like to see that role develop. And I think he's a solid dude in the ring. Not great, but solid. So, you know, best wishes to you. I hope I see you on the indies and you end up surprising everyone.
You know, CJ Parker's one of those guys that I kind of really thought about when Neville and Kalisto made their debuts. I was like, man, like, they're pushing these guys onto the main roster, not to get rid of them, but because there's already such a big main event down there in NXT, and it's only going to get bigger as the year goes on and we get more and more hires. It's like, what happens to those lower card guys? Like, unfortunately, CJ Parker might be the first of many. Like, I can see a guy like Scott Dawson being gone. Like, that dude's been developmental a long time, and there's just nothing there. You know, Mojo Rawley, like, there's just nothing there. I feel like we're going to start seeing a big round of cuts for NXT, because it's just, the roster's so strong down there that you're not going to push all of them onto the main roster immediately, but you're also not going to have any room for lower card guys unless you let some go.
Yeah, I think that there are legit, like, 10, 15, 20 people in NXT that I would happily cut just to make room for more people to give them more time. And it's not really a statement about how terrible they are, and I don't think it's bad for their careers necessarily. Because, again, once you've been to NXT, I think you're more valuable on the independent scene. Like, CJ Parker was no one. And now, without ever having actually really done anything of note, like, he'll get indie bookings just because he was there. So, and he'll be better trained as a wrestler and have an established character. Like, I think NXT, especially with it being its own brand, I think it can kind of branch out and sort of be like a general jumping off point for a lot of people getting into wrestling or, like, really, like, getting their name out there in general, and then, like, moving on to somewhere other than WWE too. I think that's an entirely viable option, especially for someone like CJ Parker, who was never going to make it to the main roster. Even if you want to say that he's fine, who the fuck is CJ Parker next to? Like, who's on his level on the card? Like, when he first started, like, Hideo Itami, oh yeah, CJ Parker versus fucking Kenta. Yeah, that's a real competition. But, like, Kenta's not even special on this roster. And, like, that's what you're competing with. So guys like CJ Parker and Scott Dawson, politely as possible, can really fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, best luck to the future. Apparently he wants to go to New Japan. I don't know if his skill set really relates to that, but I'm not going to shit talk the man before I get to see, because we all know you kind of have certain limitations sometimes in the WWE system. So who knows? Best of luck to you. I hope you don't fail. Now, someone else has left the WWE of their own volition, and it seems like this is a full-on retirement from wrestling, and that is Miss AJ Lee has officially retired from WWE. And as I said, I'm pretty sure this is a full retirement from wrestling. Obviously, you know, CM Punk's retired. There's kind of some tension between the company and Punk. I'm sure there's probably a little bit of tension between the company and AJ, but obviously not enough because they let her go out on top, as we talked about and alluded to in the last episode, undefeated at WrestleMania. She's officially better than The Undertaker. And, I mean, really, she got to go out on a high note. And what I particularly love about AJ in this scenario is the fact that she really, unlike a lot of the other women who leave, she kind of got the chance to stick around and legitimately help out the division before she dipped out. Like, Beth Phoenix, you know, she finally got her stride, like, beating Kelly Kelly, and it seemed like there was kind of like an upwards moment for the belt. And obviously, you know, they kind of fucked around with the belt, but Phoenix kind of had some, you know, some name value to her, and then she left. Eve got herself built up as a character, and she was getting really good in the ring, and I felt like she could have helped bring some legitimacy to the division, and she ended up quitting just as that was happening. AJ Lee is the one person who it felt like at that point where everyone else quit, she stuck around. She stuck around, and it helped because she was like the only chick at that point who had any kind of characterization other than the Bellas. And the Bellas have had a very, you know, shallow characterization for most of their career. But like, so AJ was the one thing that kind of made people pay attention to the division. People cheered for AJ. And despite the CM Punk chance, people like enjoyed AJ. And I feel like without her, we wouldn't have had this chance for Paige to become where she's at now, to where she's got a character. You know, she is a force in the Divas division that people come to see. People are actually interested when they see her come out. And, you know, I just want to thank AJ Lee. I know not everyone thinks she's been the greatest in ring, but she's, in my opinion, one of the greatest assets to the Divas division in recent years, and really helped do anything to improve it. And obviously we still got a long ways to go, but if Raw was any indication, as from a booking standpoint, maybe not necessarily a fan standpoint, we're not going to get into that, but if Raw was any indication from a booking standpoint, and WrestleMania from a booking standpoint, AJ Lee set in stone, like, set the path for the division to really improve, and I just want to thank her for her contributions and sticking around for as long as she did, maybe to at least cement that. Even if that wasn't her intentions, I'm glad she did it.
Hey, man. You know, she's one of the few women on the roster who can legitimately say they got over without ever once appearing on Total Divas. You know, she got over because of her character, her acting, her ring work to an extent. And, I mean, I saw this coming for a long time. You know, the girl went from living out her dream to all of a sudden, like, she took time off, and then she got injured and came back, and she got injured again. You're like, man, AJ never was injured before. What's with all these injuries? And I just think it was just killing contract time. And I think that she just wanted out. You know, there's a lot of heat between Phil and the company. And I think that she'd rather support her husband. Kind of do like the Michelle McCool thing, you know, where it's like, I'm at the peak of my career, but I can dip out if I want. And she did it. And I think Michelle McCool is the only other woman to do that, where she was at a fucking amazing, amazing point in her career. And she was just like, I'm going to leave and stay home with my husband. So bye.
I think it's important to ask the question, like, yeah, AJ probably left for a lot of reasons, because of Punk's issues with WWE, and because maybe she wanted to start a family. I mean, it's right about the same age that a lot of women leave wrestling to go start families here, and especially in Japan, where it's like, basically you hit 28 and boom, you're out of Joshi, and then you come back at 40. That's just how it works. But I think the bigger question is, what was left in wrestling for AJ? Basically, what is there left for a woman in wrestling to achieve that she didn't achieve, right? Not only
Nothing.
Did she win the Divas Championship a bunch of times, longest Divas reign of all time, had some really good matches, was highlighted on WrestleMania a couple times, but she was also in like huge main event like storylines and stuff like that. For a woman in WWE, not named Stephanie McMahon, there's nowhere to go. But down. I mean, there's literally nothing left for her to do but kind of hang around and wait for herself to be put in matches that don't matter. I mean, I would walk away too. At a certain point, and this was true for Michelle McCool also, what is there left? There's nothing to progress forward towards. And honestly, if I felt that way, I would leave whatever the hell I was doing too.
Yeah, plus, you know, here's the thing, is like, she lived the dream. She did it, you know? And I think now it's like she's doing her her dog rescue things and all of her charity work. And it's like, hey, if you've got your celebrity, you had your moment, you lived your dream, why not go do good for other people? So, yeah, I fully support this transition from AJ. I mean, I'll miss her. I thought she was a fantastic member of the roster. But, you know, it's not to say I don't ever see her coming back for at least one more match.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I could get up for, like, a Trish-AJ match. Just, like, a one-off at WrestleMania just for fun.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all said it pretty well. Like, she's accomplished just about anything she can. She even got Diva of the Year 2 years in a row. You know, she's one of the few women in modern years that have been able to defend her title at WrestleMania successfully at that, against the entire division at the time. Like, she's got a great career to look back on. She went out on a high note, and like I said, she helped the division. Now it's up to WWE and the Girls of the Future to carry that torch and make it, you know, put it to good use.
So, all right, so let me ask the question real quick. AJ Lee, Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Yes, solely because they're really short on women for the Hall of Fame.
That's pretty much what I thought.
Yeah, that sounds about fair. I mean, she's accomplished enough to make it, and she's the most relevant diva in a time where divas weren't relevant, you know, and, like, legitimately relevant. So, yeah, I think she definitely deserves it, even if just barely. Okay, so AJ Lee's retiring. CJ Parker's retiring. I wonder which one's a bigger deal. and post-WrestleMania WWE is fucking awesome right now. We have Extreme Rules is looking great. Rollins Orton is pretty much official unless something changes. I think we're going to get some kind of combination of Barrett, Sheamus, Ziggler, and Bryan for the Intercontinental title. Miz Mizdow seems for sure. Ambrose Harper seems to be starting a feud, which could be fucking sweet. I mean, there's so much shit going on everywhere that looks really good. I don't know what Reigns is going to be doing. I hope Rusev has something good after having a rematch with Cena. But overall, I think post-WrestleMania, WWE is looking great. So let's get to some questions. Let's get some opinions from us, directed by you fans, you listeners. And, of course, we can't have just three questions because that's just not quite enough. We need five questions, dude.
All right, boys and girls, this is my segment of the show and your segment of the show. This is where you've sent in your questions from Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Raja.com, QshReviews@gmail.com, and QshReviews.blogspot.com, and that brand new site that's burning up the charts. Artie, what is that site?
It's theunpunchedcard.com, of course.
It is not at all punched. It is fully unpunched. And that brings us all the way back to the questions, the second dose of questions this week for you guys, because you were just so good this year. And Santa Cush is here to give you some questions to be answered. So let's take it to, we discussed a lot of NXT on the show for good reason, because frankly, the loudest chant that I heard on Raw all night long was NXT. And that sort of brings up this question from Jody Jordan, and he wanted to know, how much of the awesomeness of the divas on NXT do you attribute to Sarah Del Rey? As always, stay classy, don't smoke crack, and remember to eat your dildos and burgers every chance you get. By the way, guys, if you reference dildos and burgers in your question, you have a 75% better chance of getting it asked.
True. I'm going to go ahead and attribute a whole lot of what we see to Sarah Del Rey, and I can't even, like, it's one of those things where the results are there. We've seen it with Summer Rae, we've seen it with Charlotte, and now even we're seeing it with Alexa Bliss, where Sarah is just taking these people and making them better. And it's just what she does, you know? It's one of those things where WWE, they nailed it. They got the perfect women's trainer. I think the big thing, too, is before, you had men training women. You didn't have women training women. Now you've got the woman training the women, and I think it's exactly what you need.
Yeah, I can't say anything that Artie didn't say. I think a lot of it is Sarah Del Rey. You have some talented ladies there, and I think, like, in the case of someone like Paige, you know, obviously she was there before Sarah Del Rey came in. She was doing fine on her own. But there's all the ladies like Charlotte and Alexa Bliss and, to an extent, Sasha Banks, the people that had just, like, a little bit less experience or no experience in the case of Charlotte. And look at what she's turning out. You know, the worst diva that she's turned out has been decent. You know, and I don't even know if there's any. I mean, there's no bad diva that they have right now. Honestly, I at least from what I can see, Carmella still, she hasn't had the chance to really show herself, but she's got a solid foundation. Sarah Del Rey, ladies and gentlemen. I do want to add, though, I think I might start adding that eat all your dildos and burgers at the. Well, how did he say that?
He said, remember to eat your dildos and burgers every chance you get.
Remember to eat your dildos and burgers every chance you get. I just might add that to my ending tagline. That sounds classy and non-crack-like.
Damn, Jody Jordan, you got some shit into the end of the show. Good for you. Okay, which brings me to question number two. There's actually going to be two more NXT questions because, hey, it's time for the future, man. And let's see, this one is from Megatroid Skittle. Awesome name. Who would you rather see called up first, Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn?
Sami Zayn. I think, and I mean, Owens is such a good package, but I think for right now, you need Owens to be kind of the dominant champion down in NXT for a little while so that when someone beats him, it's a really, really, really big deal.
Again, I completely agree with Artie. I think Zayn has been long overdue. I mean, as much as Owens is a complete package, I thought the exact same thing about Sami Zayn. I mean, you can go back to the NXT Q Scout reports. I think it was almost unanimous every single time that Zayn's ready, dude, and he's totally ready now. He needs to wrap up whatever he's doing with Owens, and he needs to be coming up, like, between SummerSlam and the end of the year, he needs to be on the main roster. And, yeah, I think Owens, like Hardy said, I think he should stick around as, like, a dominant champion for a bit and really just get a bunch of good matches out there and really put someone over.
Okay, so let's move on to question number four. That question is from @KatsukiArtist. Did I pronounce that right, Artie?
Yes, you did.
All right, I got it right. Okay, and his question is, if Samoa Joe does wind up in NXT WWE, what do you think he'll use as a finisher? I think I already know the answer to this question. The overdrive slash playmaker.
The good old OVW DSW finisher. Honestly, I don't see why he couldn't just use the muscle buster.
Because no one would want to take it.
Dude, if Cody Rhodes is allowed to go around and do it, I see no reason why Samoa Joe can't do it. I think he gets the muscle buster.
Okay, so let's move on to question number five now. This one is from Mike Hunt. And he wants to know, this is the only would-you-rather question in KushCast history. It is the only one that's ever going to be on KushCast history, but I think it's a very good question. So, guys, would you rather change your name to Hitler, and I believe he means one word, just Hitler, not like Artie Hitler or Julius Hitler, just Hitler, or only be able to watch TNA for the rest of your life?
Hitler.
And I like to imagine that means the only television you will ever see again is TNA.
Oh, Hitler, obviously.
Even if it wasn't the way you just described it, Hitler, easily. But I do want to say, even though it's supposed to be one single name, I think Artie Hitler kind of has a ring to it.
Yeah, and like, honestly, I think I could pull off the name Hitler anyway.
See, I honestly feel like the name Julius Hitler feels like it has a story attached to it. Like, yo, I'm Julius Hitler. What?
What's the story tied to that?
Yeah, just like, I was raised in South America. The less you know, the better.
I like it.
Yep.
So does that make me officially a totalitarian? Can we do that? Can like that be like my new gimmick?
Yeah, the communist thing's kind of done.
Yeah, it's time to get on with the fascists. Those are the stylish ones.
Fuck yes. It's stalling all the way, baby.
Julius is the one who makes the KushCast train arrive on time.
Sometimes.
And by on time, I mean repeatedly hours and hours late.
Always.
Well, hey, you know, sometimes I get the driver a little too drunk, and we might crash the bus a few times and have to, by the time I get to you, it might be like the third bus we've replaced. But, I mean, I get the bus there. That's what's important, guys. Right?
Yeah, maybe.
Sure, buddy. Sure.
Okay. Well, that was the end of part two of our anniversary KushCast episode 53 post-WrestleMania. Bunch of crazy dap doop dam dong, and I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy my nonsensical words that aren't even real, and as always, we have some, maybe some homework. I don't have anything on my mind other than to tell you guys to watch Invasion Attack, which me and Kyush are crazily about to stay up and watch. So, if you won't be able to heed that warning by the time this comes out, but you should go and check out that show, because I bet it's going to be pretty awesome. And how about you two? You got anything to lead these fans with?
Oh, God, I don't think I have anything. It's literally, like, way too late for me, and I just want to go to sleep.
Okay, I sort of feel like I need to pick up the slack for everybody here, but I'm also kind of drawing a blank, so fuck it. Everybody go watch the Heathcliff cartoon. I don't really know why you should or why you would, but fuck it, man. Heathcliff, do it.
That is the best homework ever. Dude, guys, don't even listen to the podcast anymore. Just spend the rest of your life watching Heathcliff.
Heathcliff cast.
Heathcliff Slater.
No. And no one would watch that. Except for me.
That's when he turns into Triple Hunter Hearst Helmsley. That's like his like real well-to-do name.
All right, cats and kittens, thank you for joining us. If you want to get a hold of us and talk to us about how fucking tired we probably sound right now, you can do that, especially Artie, at ArtieDend, and the man with the namesake, of course, Kyush himself, at Kyush Reviews. And me, your host, the Psycho Soldier, at a Psycho Soldier. Cats and kittens, thank you very much for joining us. Have an excellent night. Stay classy. Don't smoke crack. And eat your dildos and burgers every chance you get.